Testing 1-2, testing 1-2. It is August the 10th, 1989. Now first I want you to give me your name and where you live so that identifies the tape.
Okay. I'm Esther Lockman. I live at the Drakeshire Apartments, 35211, apartment 103 in Farmington, Michigan.
Okay, continue.
I was born in Detroit.
Let's see if I'm picking this up first of all, so you'll hear your...
Born in Detroit, in Corktown, which is several blocks from Tyler Stadium. My father was engineer at the house of Good Shepherd on 4th Street in Detroit. Mr. Mayberry was financial advisor to the Sisters of the Good Shepherd. Mr. Mayberry offered my father employment with the City of Detroit in 1920. My father commuted to the sanatorium ground each day from Detroit with several City of Detroit engineers. He operated an old horse-drawn steam fire engine that was moved from Detroit to pump the water for the W.E. Wood Construction Company. My family spent a month in a home on 8 Mile across from which was then the H.B. Clark Farm. We went back to Detroit.
And where was that, Esther?
The Centaur. Right on the Centaur ground.
On the Centaur ground?
Across,
okay.
from H.B. Clark Farm. I don't know what it is now. Uh-huh. But that's the entrance of the urban now.
Uh-huh. Now, Mr. Mayberry, did he own that land out there prior to...
No, the City of Detroit owned it.
I see.
But
okay.
He also was on the board for the... the old fire engine.
Uh-huh.
And
now where
my father.
I see.
The site had just set, you know.
This fire engine was on the Mayberry grounds, was it?
Well yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Taken there to pump the water
for
the W. Wood Construction Company.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And this was of course in 1920. Yeah. In 1920, my family spent a month at the home on 8 Mile, I had said that, which was across from the H.B. Clark Farm. We went back to Detroit, to the Detroit home, and until the home was remodeled, the one on the sanatorium grounds. And the family permanently moved to the sanatorium grounds in 1921.
How old were you then, Esther?
I was 9 years old.
9 years
old. There were three of us. I'm the youngest of three. I have a sister and a brother. I went to the baseline school.
Where was that?
Right where that nursery school is now.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
The Little Red
School? The Little Red School, huh?
And that was the baseline school?
It was called the baseline school.
And was that a one room or?
One room.
Uh-huh.
One room was all grades up to the 8th grade.
It's interesting.
For a couple of years, and then was sent. My family sent me to Detroit to school, St. Vincent. I lived with relatives and came home Friday and returned on Sunday. My sister and brother were sent to Detroit to school.
None of you went to Northville schools in high school?
I did, last 2 years.
I see.
11th and 12th.
I jumped the gun here. You go ahead.
Let's see, where do we go from here? I guess it doesn't make any difference. We're gonna switch it back anyway. Okay.
Why don't you finish it?
The baseline school, I told that. I have, this would be off the record, but I have.
Oh, were you?
From the first issue of the Fluoroscope, a paper begun by the patients of the sanatorium, and now it's called the Fluoroscope. The infirmary was the first building and was originally planned as a children's hospital. They entered in December 1921. And the first adult patient was admitted in January 1922. Dr. Albert Garvin and Ms. Hogan, who is now Dr. Douglas's secretary and office manager, were the first two of the staff out here. For two months, Ms. Hogan's office consisted of a packing case and a chair at the ambulance entrance to the building. The first supervisor of nurses was Miss Cora Sanderson, who with the other nurses was housed on the second floor of the infirmary. Dr. Douglas arrived to assist Dr. Garvin in May 1922. Dr. Frank Walker also came in May 1922 to take over the business administration of the sanatorium, leaving Dr. Garvin whole time for his duties as medical director. In December 1922, Dr. Garvin resigned to go to Buffalo, New York, and Dr. Bruce H. Douglas became medical director, and Dr. D.H. Saley, assistant medical director. Dr. Frank Walker resigned in September 1923 to go to the American Child Association in New York. And since that time, Dr. Douglas has continued as superintendent and medical director. At the present time, the building is occupied by 115 adult patients under the direct care of Dr. Saley and Lussman and Thompson. In 1922, a separate unit for the children was constructed and opened with a capacity of 80 beds. Recognizing the importance of early diagnosis and desiring to take care of more of such cases, an addition was made to the building, which was completed in the summer of 1929, bringing to total capacity 230 beds. The medical needs of the children were taken care of by a Dr. Nalva. The education of the juveniles and the care by a staff of teachers maintained by the Board of Education, and their play is supervised by a recreational director, Ms. Reagan. The ambulance building was completed in March 1922, housing adult patients, and consisted of a two-story building separated into wards A, B, C, D, and E. A, B, and C, and D and E ward was added in November 1927. And in December of 1930, a third floor was completed over the entire building, which now brings the capacity to 426. Not including the 23 children who occupy A3. The medical needs of the adult patients of the building are taken care of by the following physicians. The annex, a three-story building which houses 144 male patients ready for exercise, was built in 1928. The first medical advisor was Dr. C. Cable, who is now replaced by Drs. L.A. Anderson and E.E. Muller. Ms. Griffith was the first supervisor, and she was succeeded by Ms. Sharp, now at the unit. At the present time, Ms. Campbell is in charge. The institution was originally called Spring Hill Sanatorium until January 1927, when an ordinance passed by the city authorized the change to the William H. Mayberry Sanatorium in honor of Mr. Mayberry, whose philanthropic work is well known to all. I think there's another little item in here that's of interest, that as of this time, which was February 15th, 1932, the census was as follows. 15 doctors, 6 teachers, 105 nurses, 270 other employees, 150 juvenile patients, and 683 adult patients.
Is that right?
I think all of those things are interesting.
Yes, I think they're very important. Esther, I wonder if you could tell us, because we have probably a whole generation of people that doesn't remember how devastating TB was. I know you're not a medical person, but tell us why it was necessary to isolate those patients then.
Well, it was because of the contagiousness of the disease.
Uh-huh.
It was transmitted by coughing, kissing, saliva, and all that. As I say, it's really a medical thing.
Uh-huh.
But I think one of the most devastating thing about the disease, as far as I was concerned, because I was in charge of medical records, and we had to do all the admitting. And we would have fathers and mothers and maybe 4 or 5 children all being admitted at the same time.
Is that right?
You put the father in one section, the mother went to another section, and the children to another building, which was very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And
were the children separated also according to age, or were they allowed to remain together?
Well, the children was a separate building, so they did see each other on occasion, whether regardless of age.
They were all in one building, regardless of age.
But it was an emotional thing. Terrible for the family, but it was something the employee never got used to. Is that, you know, after we admitted them, they say, now's the time that you have to go to these various
places. Did they, were they ever able to visit with each other?
They did on occasion. They would set up maybe in the library on the birthday of a parent or a family, and especially the holidays, they would bring them all together and have them at the meet together and carefully because it was we on occasion wore masks for admitting people because of people used to say, you know, used to say to my mother, I can't believe that young daughter of yours, it doesn't bother you that she's over there where the disease is so contagious, and we see them at their worst.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother's stat answer was that doesn't seem afraid, and if that's the work she likes, that's what she's going to do, so.
How old were you when you began?
I went to Detroit to school until through the 10th grade at St. Vincent's in Detroit. St. Vincent, I don't know, a Detroit person?
A number of years, yes. I worked there for 25 years.
It was really the Michigan Central Depot.
Yeah.
It's St. Vincent's was right there. Right at the corner. And we had lived so close to it before we moved there. So when I came to the 11th grade, my mother said, she was kind of lonesome, I guess. There were none of the rest of them at home, and all of them had been in Detroit to school. So I had 11th and 12th at
Northfield High School.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In that summer, like with all of us, there was no other place. My sister and brother, my brother worked in the laundry in the summertime, vacation period, and my sister worked in the lab. And so after the year that I graduated, I went into the hospital and was in the office and switchboard, answering the phone mostly was what I did. Stayed until from 28 to 1930, then I went to Mary Grove College for 1 year. Drove each day from Northville, and there was no salt on the 7 mile road, I might say, at that time, and it was very difficult, and so I just made it for 1 year.
But you did drive the car yourself back then.
Every day.
Was it the family car? Did you have your own?
We had to have a couple of cars because of the family. My three of us needed a car. And there was no, from where we lived on the grounds, we had to have transportation for church and all this kind of thing.
Sure.
And you know, at one time it was lighted. The 7 mile road was lighted all the way out from downtown. And there was, I went to school by Interurban and it came through Farmington. And then at the winery down here, it went off to Rochester, and then 8 mile road to, but in later years, I could go down and get a bus from the city hall and come right out to the Mayberry Sanatorium. And it ran at frequent intervals. Mm-hmm. Right? And I suppose because of the census of the number of people that were there and the people visiting the hospital at that time.
So you started in the office and then you you went to college for a year.
Mm-hmm.
How? Then when you went back?
I went back in 1931. And then I stayed from there. From then on, I stayed until retirement closed.
Were you always in charge of medical records after that?
Well, of course, it was a long time. Oh, yes. Yes, in later years I was. It gradually built up. Medical records was just a small little area at one time, and I wasn't in that immediately. I did all kinds of things. Took histories at the children's building, and I ran a lot of office errands, and I also while before I took medical dictation, but I did eventually. And in, oh, from 1940, I was in charge of the medical records department. And the medical records department was different than the average, in as much as it, did the admitting of the patients. And all of our admissions to the hospital had to come through Herman Kiefer. No, there was no, we never admitted a patient unless they had passed through Herman Kiefer Hospital.
Oh, yeah. Right.
They were the mother house, so to speak, and they screened them somehow. That's right. They had to come through Herman Kiefer.
Do you know what the screening process was? What determined when they went?
Enough so there was X-ray and sputum and that kind of thing, which indicated that they had tuberculosis.
What determined who went to Mayberry and who stayed?
It depended upon the vacancies, I suppose. I think we always felt that Herman Kiefer kept their hospital full, and then sent whatever the overflow was to us. But we were always filled at that time with the number of patients. We had to call in our vacancy list every morning for how many women, men, and children, because at that time, well, they were all segregated now. Mm-hmm. Our ambulance went every day to Herman Kiefer and picked up however many there were, or went to other hospitals. Where a lot of the diagnoses were made at other hospitals. But it had to be cleared through Herman Kiefer as well.
Now, I seem to recall, and maybe you can clarify this, was it not a law that if you were diagnosed as being tubercular, you had to be admitted for treatment? Wasn't it a violation of the law if you did not? Do you remember that?
Well, I think it was pretty much the only law that I remember that we indulged in. I think if somebody had tuberculosis, they were glad to get in under treatment for the most part. I don't think there were very few. The alcoholics had to be committed, and we had a floor of under police guards and everything for alcoholic patients were committed there by law.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very difficult.
Maybe that's what I read about and confused me.
It was a separate section of law. And they were never allowed to leave there when they even came down for x-ray or lab or anything. The guard came with them so that they escape in any way, but that was the only, as far as the rest of the hospital, if anyone decided they didn't want to stay, they could go.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always
a... Did you have many walkaways then, like they do?
Oh, we did
hospital?
Have. Oh, sure. Yeah. And we had people that, we had a couple that got out in the cold weather and just wandered and were found later. They didn't survive, you know, that they was either got was so weak but so desperate to leave the hospital. It was a matter of, you know, a minimal hospitalization period was at least a year. No matter how minimum the disease was, which, or even if you weren't positive. So it was it was not an easy thing to accept that, and I think people thought, and if you had a lot of tuberculosis, it was many, many years. We had a doctor who was on a frame for 13 years at the Terrible Center, right there at the hospital. Yeah. Went on to Omega. I had here a little other little statistic that I think is of interest. The number, the last patient admitted was 29,464. So that's how many admissions we had.
Almost 30,000 people who were treated.
Yes. But that only represents 1st admissions. In the beginning, I understand, prior to my time, I understand that they changed the number every time someone came in to be admitted. And I've forgotten when we changed it, but along about the 40s, so that if a patient returned, and this was very frequent, because we would give them the same number, -2, 3, 4, 5, however admissions it was. So that this only represent original numbers, but the number of admissions would be, I suppose, 40, 50,000.
There were quite a few that were readmitted
then. Lots, because for me, we did surgery. Surgery was done at Mayberry, phrenics and bronchoscopies. But surgery, other than that, had to be transferred to Herman Kiefer because they did all that. And if there was anything else, we had a lot of appendicitis and other. If anything of that occurred, they had to be sent to Herman Kiefer. So when they came back, they were another admission, but it was their same number, -2 or 3. So it represents just initial, but it's something to go on. Somebody, I get called, occasionally about this stuff. Not too long ago, I was called and asked if I knew it. And this little book was what I called my brains. There's everything in here that, in wide capital,
I can see, but it's very important. Esther, because this is the Northfield Historical Society and we're interested in the larger picture is Northfield itself, how did the hospital interrelate with the city of Northfield? Was it self-contained completely?
It was almost a little village in itself. I was there because my father was a staff, chief operating engineer, and we were invited to all the parties. And as a kid, I was going to the parties too. But there were many of the people invited. As a child, I didn't pay too much attention to who they were, but I know that, Halloween, they came. I don't even remember who they were by name, but they were George and Martha Washington came to the Halloween party, and he was head of the Ford Motor, the superintendent of the Ford Motor Company in Northville.
Oh, which is plant
the plant, yeah.
Oh.
So you see, there were people that they invited. And the hospital reached out to the doctors in the area, and we did outpatient x-rays and other things for them, because for a short time I worked in the x-ray department, and that the doctors would call and want an x-ray of, we didn't do any extensive thing, but for a fracture or anything. So we were handy in that regard and reached out to all the local doctors
mm-hmm.
in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
The sanatorium was, when in full operation, it was a powerhouse and a creamery where there was pasteurization of the bottled milk that went to the patients. It was...
Did you have your own dairy herd there too?
Yeah, well, the farm, yes, and mm-hmm. from the House of Correction, they had cattle too. A full laundry, and the laundry took care of the nurses' uniforms. They said they would like to see the nurses the same crisp look that the laundry would give them, and I think that was kind of an unusual little thing that their uniforms were done right there. My father was, well, before we get away from the sanatorium, there's two or three things we had, a little bout of the polio when it was going on, and we lost a few children in that. And we had, 19 children admitted from the Hansel and Gretel Nursery School in Detroit. There was one of the employees who infected these children.
19 of them.
19 of them. And they sued this Hansel and Gretel School, and I think it was some other place where she had the x-ray taken. I don't know whether it was the Osteopathic Hospital in Detroit or just where it was, but anyway, two places. And part of medical records was to take the records of these children to the attorney who was the parents had hired him to pursue this, which was one of the high points, really, of the, to have that many children infected by this. And the other thing is, parents, was one story that was kind of interesting, I think, of when one of these nursery children went home, and we considered them cured and ready for discharge. The mother wanted to give a little party, and she said she invited children in the neighborhood, and they didn't come. Which is how afraid people mm-hmm. still were of, and that was kind of sad, but it's off the record or on the record, whichever way you want to do it. But it is an interesting little story, I think, about, and that existed a lot, I think.
I know it was a devastating disease. I can recall that from my childhood. But, what year did Mayberry close?
1969. Mm-hmm. The it kept getting less and less, you know. I think during the Depression, we were paid by scrip. And if you paid anything, paid for anything by scrip, you never received any change. It was, I remember when they would bring the script, it was just piles, and it was all $1 denomination type of thing. And if you went, when I went to the movie, they'd punch it. And I had more of that stuff punched. And then, you know, you'd forget to take it, and it was a terrible waste as far as money was concerned. Our family was very fortunate because script was accepted for taxes, and so our relatives exchanged what little they could with us so that we would have some cash. But that was an, I had one for a long time, and then finally just all went to pieces. So
did the merchants of Northville accept?
Yes, mm-hmm. For punching. You know, a guy changed. Never got a, they take two or three of the scripts. A lot of places wouldn't, but some did. It was a kind of a stress period in one's life. The homes, the doctor's homes that were built on the grounds now, you know, that the Rangers occupied, they were built in 1934 as a WPA project. The federal government did mm-hmm. that for jobs, to create jobs. That's something I don't know as everybody knows.
You'd be surprised how many people live in Northville now, and if you're 10 or 15 years and don't know that Mayberry State Park was formerly the Mayberry TV Sanitarium.
I know we had I worked very closely with a pastoral minister here in our leading summers when I worked over here, and she was a Dominican sister, and I told her I had retired from the Mayberry Sanatorium, and she gave me this blank look. I said, "You never heard of it?" And never heard of it. And I nearly crossed her off my list completely, because to me it was my whole life.
Sure.
And still remains that. It's a big part of our family. As a matter of fact, it's kind of eerie that this had come up, because two things made me get this stuff out the other day. We had a reunion at Dr. Romanek's the other day of the Mayberry people. He's done it on a couple of occasions now. I don't know whether you know him or not.
No.
He was the last pediatrician at the hospital. And still, although he wasn't there so very many years, he's very Mayberry oriented and brings back the people that he knows like to be together. And there were perhaps about four of us. Most of them doctors and former nurses. That led me to believe that I should be. And then my birthday led me to believe that I should do something, which is crawled very high this last time, and I will be out of the 70s come next year, so basically 79. So I took all of these pictures that I had of my father and of the sanatorium to my nephew, because there's a picture inside the hospital. This is a picture this is the invitation to the change of, in this picture, enormous picture hung in the lobby of the Mayberry Sanatorium. That's Mr. Mayberry's Sanatorium. And there's the board at the time. And I loaned this to somebody, and I don't know what happened to that picture. And then this was, they drilled one well, but this was the second one that was there. And of course, that's my father's.
Water.
As a reserve. And my father had thought it would be kind of nice to have a pump or a fountain. And you can see from that little car in the corner that it's a long time ago.
Now this appears to be a fairly good distant photo.
Yeah.
Did your nephew, was he able to make a copy of it?
He made copies of all of that. And I said if I was going to give it up, if they had any interest in it, I'd give it to them. Because, and so he made copies for his sisters and brothers. And so they have it. So any of this, I don't know whether anybody wants it or not, but or whether they're interested at all.
If you had a copy of that photo of the sanatorium itself, but he didn't give you a copy, he just gave you the original back. I don't think the society wants to be responsible for. Oh, is this a copy?
That's a copy.
May I take this?
Yeah, well, you can have that. You can have any of these that you want.
Okay.
Any of these. I'm giving up all of these.
Well, not the originals. Don't give up the originals.
Nobody wants them.
I'll take this. Mayberry Sanatorium, about what year? Was there any idea?
Well, it was last finished, according to this article, the last buildings, the top was put on them. When did I say it was? Third floor completed in December of 1930. So that's a complete building.
Okay.
These are buildings, if they want that.
Okay.
And this is a Mayberry manual in which there's everything. Do you have any of that? Do you have one of those?
I don't believe they do. I know that Harriet Gibson had that with her when I talked with her, but she only had the one copy.
Mm-hmm.
See, I can't be sure that you get things back. That's why
I have two. So if the Historical Society would like that, I would be happy for them to take it. And I do think you should have this. I'll make a copy just for myself,
okay. But
it's got this little thing over on the side here, but it is the 1930s, and you know the reason I think I kept it, maybe, just by accident, but then here it says, Miss Esther Lockman, who was taken to Harper Hospital to be operated on for appendicitis, has our best wishes for a speedy recovery.
So you kept that.
February the 9th, I went to the hospital.
Uh-huh.
But I will keep this, but you're welcome to have...
All right, I'll take this in.
I don't know, I could talk for, I suppose, hours with them. My father was injured on the grounds in 1936, and never went back to being chief operating engineer, but was in charge of the laundry. And at that point, we moved off of the Mayberry grounds. He went back to work in 1938, so we moved to Seven Mile Road and built our home because we no longer would be entitled to live in the house on the ground.
That was 7 Mile and what then?
7 Mile and Ridge.
7 Mile and Ridge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they asked him to stay on in the capacity of simply because he was so knowledgeable about what had gone on in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. When they were pumping the water after the well was dug, Mr. Mayberry and the engineers ate at the Mayberry farm. That was before the Whipple time, Howard and Helen Howard Whipple. Mr. Mayberry died, you know, of tuberculosis at the farmhouse.
Did he? Mm-hmm. What can you recall about the town of Northville itself as you grew up? I know most of your memories, because of the fact that you went to high school in Detroit and you commuted, but the town itself, did you spend much time in town shopping or anything?
Well, we were all very involved in Our Lady of Victory Church. As a matter of fact, family, we built two churches there. There was no church when we came. We had a church in the library, which they're now putting down in your historical section there. Mm-hmm. But that was the first place that once a month we had a mass there, a church. Otherwise, we had to go into St. Mary's of Redford, and then a small little frame church was built, and then, of course, in 1957 or so, when we built, now, of course, it's all redone again, and it's a beautiful church, and not even looking like the last one that that our family was involved in. Mm-hmm. But we were very active in the
you recall attending Mass in the library, do you?
Mm-hmm. Do you? Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was 5 miles old.
Uh-huh.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Remember that real well. The priest had to come from Plymouth or from some other place to for the Mass on Sunday. And then we went to Northfield. We went to St. Mary's of Redford. And to our Lady of Good Counsel in Plymouth. So to complete all the Sundays, we had to go that distance to go to church. And that's why we were sent back to Detroit to school, all of us. So my mother insisted that we have a parochial education. Mm-hmm. There was no other way. And it was kind of difficult from the standpoint because my father, in those days, which was most unusual, your salary and home and everything was based on the family number, which would have been 5, and we weren't there, which was the cost of paying for tuition and living with family in Detroit, it was an expensive thing, but it's the way my family insisted on having it, and I often wondered, how our life would have been if we hadn't come out to Northville. and lived in Corktown. My father and mother were, which is Holy Trinity, you probably read about as the...
Well, I know of Holy Trinity.
Yeah. That's where my parents were married. Okay. And we go by there, have gone by there many back there many times. This is what was in the Markville Record when I retired. In a letter from Mayor Gribbs, complimenting me at on July 1st, 1970, said, "I am also aware that the number of years worked with the health department by yourself, your brother and your father, total 93 years. Few families can claim such a durable association with the operation of a municipal department."
Now, you touched upon the church.
And I was,
what else about North Phillips?
Well, I belong to the Business and Professional Women's Club during the time that I well, after we got back from school, we did it, but, really, the people with whom I associated, mostly, were the ones I knew at our church. And, of course, we used to go to all the other church dinners in the town, too, at that time. Methodists had a chicken and their festivals, and then we attended all of that kind of thing. But for the most part, the people I knew were associated with either Mayberry or Our Lady of Victory.
The other social activities in Northville you didn't participate in, like the... Well, you mentioned the movies before. You must have come in.
Saturday night was there to the band concerts that were in the center of the street. Get some popcorn and watch the people go by and go to the movie. That was Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
There's a... I don't know whether Historical has that many pictures of that, but that's where the band played, you know, up on this. Have you seen the pictures of that?
I haven't seen the pictures, but I've been told about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And isn't that where the interurban turned around to?
That's right. It backed, from the Ford Motor, it backed up into the center of the street. It swung around in front of the Ford factory, and then backed into the center of the street, right up to the bandstand, most of it. My last let's see, 20,000. At the time of the closing, the ambulance driver and I